What are some realities? My view is that the people that know the boards best are directors themselves, and not necessarily shareholders or academics or regulators or advisors who are largely outside the boardroom. There is still, and I say this in my paper at the beginning of your binder, the evidence confirms this, there is still an unproven relationship, and I don't think there ever will be a proven relationship between board effectiveness, structural factors that Carol mentioned, independence, conflicts of interest, things that are publicly measurable, and corporate governance performance. I believe if you actually open the hood of the car and look at who's driving the car and look at how the engine is constructed, that is what contributes to whether the car ultimately is effective or not. So I talk about competency and behavior, and these tools are evolving, and right now, in my view, disclosure is inadequate. What do the experts say about the effectiveness of board evaluations? This is a telling quote. It's the head of the National Association of Corporate Directors in Washington. Some of the board evaluations I've seen don't rise to the level of awful. And I would agree with that. And there's not a whole lot of evidence out there because these things are largely behind the scenes. But they tend to be question-oriented, paper-based, structural questionnaires that sort of, you know, ask structure questions. And it's sort of garbage in, garbage out. If you're not doing rigorous deep dives, then you're really not going to get informative analysis and reporting, which is the second quote. As Ken said, this is an experienced director, the present state of evaluation is terrible. We get these standardized check-the-box forms. So first, defect in design. They're non-rigorous of drafting of statement. I'll give you an example in a second. And then if you don't have the rigor, then you're not going to have the analysis and the reporting. And they're not really customized to suit the board. They're interpreted as a one-size-fits-all, both for the matrix, for the type of directors that you're looking for, and also for the nature of the evaluation itself. And there's not a lot of thought put in my experience, with a lot of the in the middle ones, of crafting. What exactly is the skill set that we need for this board? And what should our evaluation, particularly of individual directors, include? And this is a uniquely Canadian requirement. When I had suggested to the TSX and OSC and teachers that you really want to recruit on the basis of competencies and skills and assess on the basis of competencies and skills and the achievement of the position description. And now in Canada, we're required to do this. So it's interesting to see how all these Canadian companies, and you don't have to do this in the US, you don't have to assess individual directors. You certainly don't have to recruit on the basis of competencies and skills. So this is interesting as we see this over the next 3, 4, 5 years unfold and so-called best practices unfold in the area. Let me give you an example of what I mean by rigor. This is some of actual board reviews. 1.2, I'm going to give you the non-rigorous, then the rigorous. Assess the appropriateness and clarity of the board mandate. Well, I don't know what that means. And what happens is you get directors checking, well, yeah, we do that. We have, you know, on a scale of 1 to 7, we'll have a 6 or a 7. Or on a scale of 1 to 5, we'll have a 4 and a 5. And then you have everything clogged at this end, and you really might have a false sense of reality because you're not implementing or incorporating at least best practice. And best practice for charters is that every charter should be complete, detailed, clear, up-to-date, benchmarked against regulatory requirements, reviewed, approved, externally disclosed, and allocated to a work plan. Every charter item should be allocated to a work plan and assessed and then refined. Now, the lawyers won't tell you that. The lawyers will want you to be up there, 10,000 feet in the air, that their charters actually have to include these words now. So I think that charters will evolve as well as, and now they have to do position descriptions. So you have to have rigorous charters. You execute the charter. So these are the questions that if something goes wrong in crisis times that other people, government regulators, experts, etc., will come in. And these are also best practices for companies and for boards, the treatment of risk. So when you ask these types of questions, the data that you get is interesting. Here is some of the data. I actually crossed behavior and risk from my database. And some of the things you're getting really are quite interesting. We don't have time to go through it all, but some of the boards that are are on ISS and GMI and have got 99.9% and they're good on the Clarkson matrix and they're good on others, if you actually ask them some of these things in across the board, and I picked risk, but it could be executive comp, it could be others, and that's not true for all of them, but you might have a false sense of reality. Because when I ask them my questions of, you know, top boards as well as other boards, they say, well, Richard, we don't do any of these things. Well, but you're getting excellent external ratings. And you might be defective because you're not doing what you actually should be doing. So the external ratings can't necessarily measure the heart and soul of how you treat risk or executive compensation. We don't have time to go through the quotes, but this will just give you a flavor. And this is based on actual data, including meltdowns of risk management failure where it's been behavioral in nature, where the CRO, is Chief Risk Officer, is blocking, through everything we've talked about, minutes and control and behavior, of the chair of the risk committee or the audit committee from gaining and accessing appropriate information and influencing agendas, influencing the construction of minutes, etc. But until and unless you ask these questions of the board and of management, you're not going to get the right issues. And if something slips through the cracks, and it's a key material business risk, operating risk, including food safety, then disasters can happen. So investors want to know, and the public wants to know, what's your risk management policy, and what questions are being asked at the board level. And those are legitimate means of inquiry. And if you have a superficial board analysis, or you're not recruiting competencies of individual directors, including risk management competency, then you're really exposed, potentially. Let's do our matrix now. This is my, and this is in my paper, this is my matrix playground, if you will, of when I do a competency build for a board, I am rigorous. So the days of, you know, and this, again, it's unique in Canada, the Americans don't have to do this, what competencies and skills do we need as a board? And Larry and I were talking earlier, you know, about firms that actually should be doing these things, search firms, that don't ask, what's your strategy? Because your strategic plan should really dictate the competencies and skills you need for individual directors. So some of the competencies, and I go into behavior as well. So let me give you an example of a competency build that I did. Very specific. So it can't be general. Experience as a CEO. Well, CEOs are becoming harder to get. So it's not, it's direct reports to the CEO. It's the nature, the specific nature of the CEO. So I ask management and the board, what do you need in your next CEO? It's not just a CEO, and some of them are. Experience as a CEO, a senior officer in a similar related business includes establishing going concern processes, measurable business objectives, and strategic plans and executive performance accountability for this particular company. This particular company also needed an operator. Markets from within our sector business demonstrated competence in project and performance management. Specific industry experience. Very specific financial experience, not just financial literacy, but very specific financial literacy, because it's a whole arena what financial literacy is. Specific behavior, we talked earlier about coaching and development, and specific diversity. Then you take this, and that's the most important step, because that drives your selection of director. If you get this wrong, the recruitment will fail. So you give this to the nominating committee that has to roll up its shirt sleeves with support of management, or the search firm doing the search saying, this is our director profile. And each director should opine on this, their level of skill. So if you have a very well-developed competency and you have the skill level, which you can pick whatever you want, but it should be obvious to the director what level of skill they're at. So they don't say they're a 5 or a 6 when they're really a 2 or a 3. And it's okay to be a 2 or a 3. You can't be a 5 or a 6 on everything. So you need to define your terms and your skill level, your skill acquisition level. Again, a unique Canadian requirement. So it's unique to Canada, and I think, to my knowledge, actually I've used this as an example, Nexen has got one that is just outstanding. Because what they've done, and I think other Canadian companies will follow suit, is they've said, listen, we want to say what we need. So it's not the boilerplate stuff. We have business judgment, we have literacy. We have very specific competencies and skills that we as a board need. Oh, and by the way, and this is the really novel, innovative thing, and I think more companies should be doing this, what are the number of directors that are on our board who possess skilled or expert application in each of these competencies? So they've gone and they've actually executed the competency matrix, and they've completely disclosed it to shareholders.